Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hi, Paul. Nice to be here with you, and welcome to all our listeners to the next chapter with Charlie. I'm Charlie Hedges, and this is the show where we discuss ideas for you and your next chapter in life, whether that be large or small. Today I'm visiting with our good friend Terry Hershey. If you're a frequent listener to of the show, then you're familiar with Terry, who is a regular speaker on our show, a regular guest, I guess I should say. Terry is a prolific writer, conference keynote speaker, renowned landscape architect, spiritual advisor, and I could probably name three or four other things, but those are the biggies. Today, Terry and I plan to chat thoughtfully about the meaning of life. Now, I know that's crazy to think we can talk about the meaning of life in our 40 minutes or so, but I really believe we can. So many people struggle with this idea of the meaning of life, as I have over the last few years, but I've come to the conclusion that it's not all that complicated, and that's what I want to talk about today. So instead of a long explanation on our subject, I want to jump right into it and get the show on the road. Yo, Hirsch, what's up, bro?
Charles, how are you?
I am well. Yes, I am really well. And you?
I'm actually good, yeah.
Yeah?
I'm in Seattle and it's summer. It's pretty nice.
You'll never guess. I was I'm taking a writing class in SA, and my SA teacher was talking about her visit to this unknown island in the Puget Sound called Vashon.
Oh, really? Does she know somebody here or something?
Yeah, she knows somebody. I said, so we know two of the five people that live on Vashon. Anyway, a few weeks ago, you wrote in one of your Sabbath moments a quote from Joseph Campbell that I thought was really, really profound on this subject of the meaning of life. And for those who don't know Joseph Campbell, I don't know when he was born, but he died in 1987.
No. Oh, yeah, Joseph Campbell did 1987, correct.
Yeah, I looked it up, Wikipedia.
Yeah, that's right.
He was an American, what they call a mythologist, best known for his work in comparative mythology.
And religions,
And comparative religion. Look at you. You can cover the rest of this. His work appears in covers many aspects of the human experience. His six-part PBS special, The Power of Myth, is probably one of the most watched programs ever on PBS. And I wish we could talk about myth. We may at the end, but I'm afraid it's a distraction. But at least that's, maybe we should just at least tell people what we mean by myth. And it's a positive interpretation. You wanna tell us what we mean by myth, Terry?
Well, myth is simply the framework, the story framework.
Exactly.
It's what gives meaning to the story. So, because only in how many years in our history did we have printed word?
Oh yeah, since it's 600 years now, or
maybe
something like that. Yeah,
and so before that, there were thousands of years without it, which meant the only communication really was through verbal and storytelling.
Right.
And you'd sit down and you'd tell a story, and the story that you passed on, the myth, I mean, it became, everyone in the United States would know it if they watched that old, what was that old, the Kunta Kinte thing, the old miniseries?
Roots, yes.
That's about myth.
Exactly.
And you passed that on to your children.
Exactly. Yeah, myth is less about facts than it is about truths and what's going on in lives rather than telling the exact facts. So the exact fact may or not be accurate, but the truth within what happened in that story is accurate. Does that make sense?
Yeah. When I talk about my son and I were talking about his birth the other day, and he wanted to know what time he was born. And I was telling him what was going on at the time and how I felt and what was going on in my heart and spirit, what was going on in his mom, you know, all this stuff, because he's a later in life child for us. So it was a big, obviously, momentous deal, as you would know. And so I said he was born at 5:30 in the morning, et cetera. And he said, oh, man, he didn't know that. So anyway, he went to hunt it down, and he wasn't. He was born at 8:30 at night. But the point is, everything about the story was true, though.
Yes.
How I felt, where I was, what was going on with his mother and me to give birth to him. That's the myth.
Yeah, and that's what's important.
That's the meaning.
Yes.
And so my son texted him back and showed me his birth certificate and said, Dad, it's 8:30. I said, well, son, it felt like 5 in the morning.
Well, you know, yeah, I think that's a great analogy of what myth is all about and how it goes throughout the whole history. As a matter of fact, you know, C.S. Lewis, who is, for those of you who don't know, is a lay theologian, but probably the most well-known theologian, and he was a professor of medieval literature at Oxford, wasn't it, or was it Cambridge?
No, it was at Oxford.
It was at Oxford. And he said anybody that reads the first 11 chapters of the Bible and it doesn't interpret it as myth doesn't know how to read.
Well, it's the same. I mean, for example, the truth of the story I told my son. Now, the facts themselves, I mean, even changing my story with the new fact that it was 8 at night instead of 5 in the morning, that still doesn't change the truth of the story.
No.
And it still doesn't affect me. I can tell it the next time and just add that new nuance that it was 8 at night. But the truth of the story is the underpinning of it, what was going on.
And your feelings, as you were saying, as your feelings as a new father, as an older guy who's not supposed to be able to have children, but you have, here you are with a child, and the overwhelming feeling of that. There is no way that doesn't make a difference if that's 8:30 or 2:30 or 5:30.
I think you hit on it just with the phrase "an older guy." Apparently, there's some memory issues.
I have been going through memory issues lately, and it's part of getting older. But anyway, let's get into our subject here, because I really love this quote by Joseph Campbell. So we've kind of identified, you know, when we say he's an expert in mythology, it doesn't mean he's an expert in there is one legitimate interpretation of myth, is that it's an untruth. But that's not what we're talking about here. There's several definitions of myth, and we're talking about these are truths.
Actually, the word meaning fits there. It's how people throughout history have given meaning to the way we see and articulate what we see.
Where did you come up with that?
What do you mean, where do I come up with it?
That's a really good statement.
Yeah, actually, I made it up.
Just made it up right now.
I should write it down.
Yeah, you should write it down, because that was good. And yeah. I can't remember. You remember my memory. But anyway,
Is Paul taping it?
Yes, Paul is taping it, so it will be taped when we can come back and get it off the tape. Yeah. And I'll send you a copy when we do it so you can put it on your website. In your Sabbath moment, I believe it was probably 3 weeks ago, maybe longer, I don't know, you quoted Joseph Campbell as saying this quote, "Life itself has no meaning. However, each of us has meaning, and we bring meaning to life." Can you talk to me, not about the whole quote, and I will read it again, because I think readings need to be read twice. "Life itself has no meaning. However, each of us has meaning, and we bring it to life." Would you talk to me about that first clause, "Life itself has no meaning"? What does that mean to you?
Well, I mean, the meaning part of life is the human interaction with it. That's the meaning part of life. I mean, you end the day, there's nothing exterior that gives me meaning. Outside, I see sunshine, I see trees, I see my garden. If I walked around my property, I would see, my stepdaughter and, you know, maybe my wife being home or whatever. I would interact with people. But the meaning is not about the fact that the characters in that play are visible to me. That's not the meaning. The meaning is the connection, the relationship, the storyline, the myth, That's the meaning. The meaning is what I have brought to it.
Is there such a thing as a meaning that is just for Terry only, and it is not a relational meaning?
I don't know what that is. I mean, I don't know what that means, because I'm only human in my relationships, with my interaction with space and with things and with...
Oh, okay. I was thinking of human relationships only.
Yeah, no, I mean, but my meaning is only in the context of those relationships. Even if I'm a Trappist monk or I'm in solitary confinement, the point is I still had a mother at one time. I still had a father, right?
Oh, so I've not... This is new thinking for me.
Yeah, there's something that happened to me that put me in that place.
It really does link well with, you know, what is at least attributed to Aristotle as saying the meaning of a person's life is to contribute to the value of society. That's a very relational.
Yes, wholeheartedly. I can pretend that I'm isolated and we're not connected, but I agree with him. I mean, yeah.
What about when I paint? And I'm painting because I can't figure out a way to sell painting, but I'm painting for me.
Everything you paint, I've watched you paint. I have a painting of yours in my office up here. I've watched you paint, and you need to give me another one of your paintings. You gave me one of your early ones. I need one of your later ones.
Okay.
Anyway, I've watched you paint, but your painting comes from stories in your life. The whole myth thing, it informs. Informs is the right verb there. It informs us.
Oh, so that's why that second part, we bring the meaning to life in our relationships?
Without even knowing it. It'd be better if we did. It'd be better if we were aware. It'd be better if we were intentional, no doubt about it. Or there's mystery to it. You're throwing some red up there, and it's because you're feeling on edge or something. There's something raw about that, and it's coming out, and you're not sure where it comes from. But the point is, it links to something. And the key is that you're attaching it to something that is real inside of you.
Yes, and that seems, I hope this is not confusing, but I feel that it's been a very personal and not so much a social thing. However, I do appreciate it more if somebody else likes it. It does, there is something about that, you know, that I'd love to say I'm altruistic and, you know, just only thinking about me and the painting.
It's not a social thing. Are you nuts? I know you. You've been to museums. Look at the hundreds and thousands of people that stand around paintings and it evokes something in their own story. Profound.
So we could safely say, according to Terry Hershey's definition, that meaning is found, it must be found in relationship. I'm not going to say primarily in relationship, but it must be, that is the base of it.
In other words, I don't derive my meaning from someone else. No. It plays itself out in relationships. There's no doubt about that.
Oh, okay.
I derive my meaning from being connected to what is an authentic base, an authentic root, you know? That's where I find my meaning.
And how do we find that authentic root? You know, because I get that question. I asked the question of a man last week. I get that question all the time. I'm looking for, you know, we have to know our direction in life, and I could easily change words, and we have to know my meaning in life. They wouldn't call it meaning, but they would call my purpose in life, as if I have some grandiose purpose in life itself, as we were talking about.
Well, no. I mean. Well, there was another Parker Palmer thing. He quoted a woman whose name was Florida Maxwell. Anyway, she was 85 when she wrote a little thing, and she wrote, "You need to claim the events of your life to make yourself yours," and because you have to truly possess all that you've been and done. In other words, you have to own yourself. And her words were, you have to be fierce with reality. I liked that.
I liked that a lot as well.
You have to be fierce with reality. In other words, so if I do that, and I look in the mirror, this is not a fun thing particularly, because I'm going to see a pretty complex and conflicted soul. And I'm looking for this thing called meaning, but I'm thinking, shit, that's a lot of stuff I don't want to see. And yet, I've done some things, I've tried hard, I've loved, I've not loved, I've hurt, I've, you know. But so what does it mean to be fierce with reality? And the deal is, at some point I have to put my arms around all of that. There are times when I was generous, there are times I was self-serving, there are times when I was compassionate, there are times when I was spiteful, there are times when I was courageous, times when I was cowardly. But the point is, I'm at home with that now.
How did you get comfortable with that? Because I think that's so valuable. I think that would settle the question for so many about what is meaning and purpose in life. Is first of all being comfortable with yourself, and under that understanding that yourself, you are adding value to or contributing to the value of society. How do you come to that?
I wish I knew the movie, and it was a dance movie, and maybe it was Bob Fosse or something. Anyway, it was an old dance movie, 20, 30 years ago at least. And the dancers, you know, she's working her tail off to get noticed, to get her job, as you would do in that. Finally, whoever it was, Bob Fosse or whoever the director was, just said, you know, you're good, obviously, but there's... He said, you have to answer this question, who are you dancing for? That's it.
And the good answer would be from, I think the movie was Chorus Line.
That sounds possible.
Yes. What would be a good answer to who are you dancing for?
Well, I'm not dancing to impress anyone. I'm not dancing to earn anything. I'm not dancing to get even with anyone. I'm not dancing out of anger. I'm dancing because there's a dancer inside of me that wants to come out.
You know, I must sound to people like an anti-American communist, in which I'm absolutely not. I love what we've done here. I think we're in a bit of a screwed-up state right now. But there is that American narrative that I talk so much about that is saying we have to be doing it for somebody else. Somebody else has to recognize it. We have to get our self-well-known in order to be purposeful or meaningful in this life, don't you think? Don't you think that concept is out there?
Yeah, the irony... Capitalism, and I'm not here to debate economic policy, but
right.
There's something about the nature of being noticed and being on it's a winning-losing thing. And you have to get that. It's a fundamental thing. Your son knows this. I mean, he lives in a world where winning and losing is everything, and so you want to do that, but you also want to be at the best of who you are, whether you win or lose.
Exactly. Exactly. That's why they play. It's the concept they play. They call one at bat at a time. And after you're done with that at bat, it's history. It doesn't matter if it was a home run or a strikeout.
Yeah, it's the same in golf. I mean, we always say one shot at a time, and then someone will say, "But I saw your last shot, so there's not really a lot of hope."
Hey, with that, we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back because I've got another direction I want to take in. So let's take a quick break here. Hi there, I'm Charlie Hedges, and you're listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie. And we are talking about the meaning of life with Terry Hershey, who is theologian, I'm a theologian and landscape architect and a bunch of other things. But since we're talking theologian, what do you think, and we were raised in conservative traditions, what do you think our theological colleagues or pastors at the time would think about that comment that life itself has no meaning?
I have no idea. I mean...
Well, let's guess from it. You've played in that world long enough.
Well, obviously they would say that there is a specific meaning, yeah, and it's dictated by a creator, sure.
Yes. They say that each of us has a different meaning or each of us has the same meaning.
Well, it depends. I mean, some of them would articulate it in terms of sort of what they would call God's will, but
yeah, yeah, and then your particular giftedness
and
that
happiness. That was always something I grew up with when I was young. That there was something called God's will, which sadly, as I look in retrospect, it was about what vocation I was going to have, and
yeah.
And this is the thing that drove me nuts, is because if you didn't know God's will, then I was supposed to, what the implication is, I just wasted those years of my life because I didn't know it. So that means the conversation I had with friends or loved ones or whatever didn't count. I mean, that's the kind of lunacy of that theology.
Yeah. And then if you do another altar call, then you'll be okay.
Yeah. And my opinion now is that whole thing about, quote, God's will is not really about God's will. It's about God. It's about control and security. Well, I want to have closure in my life. So the thing about when you take that away, when you go with the Joseph Campbell thing, there is no meaning. That means you start with this wonderful word. It's called mystery. That means you're exploring. That's the power of it. You're learning. You're growing. There's curiosity.
That's such a powerful concept, and I think. All of us have that within us, and it gets pushed back. I know with me, it doesn't quite get pushed back because I'm curious almost to a fault. But I love that we're born with mystery, and it's not about going out and trying to find, like God hid our meaning, and our goal in life is to go out and find our meaning. It's that we're learning ourselves and creating it as we go along, and so we are bringing that meaning at every moment, and it may be a different meaning this year than it was a decade ago. It almost should be, shouldn't it?
Yeah, of course, in terms of how you play it out, but you're still, the meaning has to do with being empathetic and compassionate and kind and generous and big-hearted. Those things are non-negotiables. That's just part of the deal. If it's a foreclosure thing, that there's this thing I have to find. In another Sabbath morning, I talked about the guy that he went up to this was in India, went up to a holy person by the road and said, I got a dream appeared to me, and that you had a stone, a precious stone. Can you give it to me? Can you give it to me? And the holy man reached into his little bag and said, oh, sure, here it is. Of course, this is one of the largest diamonds in the history of mankind. And the guy's like, oh, my, wow. Goes home, he's got this diamond. Now he's got the riches beyond belief. Of course, he can't sleep. The next day he comes back to the holy man and says, now can you give it to me? And he says, what, I already gave it to you. No, he said, can you give me whatever it is that allowed you to get rid of the diamond?
That's beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah. In other words, that's like the meaning thing, God's will thing. It's like, I got the diamond, now what do I do? The same thing you're supposed to do at the beginning.
And you know what you named is, you went through a list of sort of what meaningful things are, and those are, they're largely would fit into a category that I might call virtue or ethics. And that is where there really is definable meaning, that you live a virtuous life, you know, one that's big-hearted and caring and peaceful and helpful. I think, you know, to me, kindness is like one of the biggest words in our vocabulary, that if we could all do that a bit more, we'd be a lot better shape. But those are the things in the Bible, rather than going out and searching for some exact, you know, what real estate agency am I going to buy? Okay, so I'll tell you a new thought that's come to my mind that fits right in with Joseph Campbell's thought here. And as I've been writing lately and thinking off and on about the meaning of life, it came to me much of what Joseph Campbell had to say. It didn't come to me that life itself has no meaning, although I tend to really like that. I put I changed prepositions and say, instead of searching for the meaning of life, which is going out there and saying it's external of me, it's meaning in life. So whatever I'm doing at the present moment, I am doing, it is my meaning. It is meaningful at the moment because there's meaning going on as we're talking right now.
Yeah, and the meaning is that we can make a difference in this moment. We can make a difference here.
If to nobody else but to ourselves.
The truth, it makes a difference. I mean, if you care, it makes a difference. If you show up, it makes a difference.
Boy, this sounds like this is starting to sound like a good book to me.
If you show up, it makes a difference. In the one you quoted, the Parker Palmer one, that was I told the story of the rookie. You know the rookie.
Remind me. That's the one where he came back at 30 years old and pitched?
35 years old. And
yeah.
He was a science teacher, and he coached baseball, but he had washed up because he'd hurt his arm. He was trying to get them to perform, and they wouldn't perform. And he said, where are you doing? Where's your dreams? Why aren't you pursuing them? So he went, and he got drafted by the Tampa Bay Devil Rays and went to minor league, and it was not fun. It was tough, hard. Everything was – he was going to quit. So he goes to a little league game, watches, and stands on the outfield fence. The center field comes out. Nine-year-old kid. Of course, the nine-year-old kid looks over at this adult standing at the fence and tips his hat and smiles at him. So he goes back for the next day, for the next game, because he was going to quit. And he says to the young kid who was the superstar there, Brooksy. He says, Brooksy. He's smiling. He's all alive. He says, you know what we get to do today? We get to play baseball. I mean, that's my deal. You know what I get to do today? I get to show up. I get to be kind. I get to be magnanimous. I get to be big-hearted. I get to be generous. I get to make a difference somewhere.
Terry, what if I don't know where to show up to?
What are you talking about? You don't get out of bed?
Sometimes rather late.
Well, I know, but you're having a conversation with Paul. You show up there. I mean, the point is, and you bring I know you well enough to know that you want to bring your A game to the podcast. In other words, you're showing up. That's the whole point. And it's not about whether you want to make that's the part of it is, yeah, okay, I want to make a name for myself. I want to be high on the map. Okay, whatever.
Yeah, that's really not my goal here.
Yeah,
no.
That's secondary. The number of people who have, we know in our world, some of them hit, some of them don't, but that's not the deal.
The deal is to show up.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. So we're coming. I'm driving definitions as we're going along. One is the meaning of life is relational. And now the meaning of life has to be wherever, you know, that old statement, wherever you are, really be there. It's show up. It's pay attention and give your best as you're doing that, and that's bringing meaning to your life.
Absolutely.
I think you've already answered my question when I was talking about personal meaning, although I'm going to go into that a little bit more. But I have to, you know, the way my brain thinks. My brain thinks in categories, and I had divided into three categories, and we've covered one and a half. We've covered the theological category. What about a social meaning? Do we have? I mean, other than being relational, is there something specific that we have that we're socially responsible for or a duty to, or is that something that is up to each individual? I'm thinking of things like your family, your job, your community. Do you think there's something like that? There's a social meaning that we need to pursue?
Well, I fundamentally believe that we. I want to leave the world a better place after I've left it. I want to leave this moment a better place after I've left it.
What do you call them, Terry? I keep using the wrong words. The legacy and the resume, is it virtues? Is it?
Oh, eulogy. Eulogy virtues.
Eulogy resume, as opposed to legacy.
Versus eulogy virtues.
Okay.
Yeah. And the resume virtues are the ones that, I scored high, I did this, I was the best, etc. The eulogy virtues were, this person made me feel real, the things. Because when you tell those stories, those are the stories. Those are the ones that get you every time.
Those are the ones that really count. And once again, we're going back to the relational aspect, is that we are created on as relational beings, and we really need to act that way. So that leads to my second or third final question here. Is there such a thing that's not social, that's a personal meaning? Like, let's go back to me and painting, or both of us and writing. There is something about it that I can write poetry and I can know no one's ever going to read it or ever really going to appreciate it, but I love writing poetry. And it gives me a deep satisfaction of writing that I've expressed something that's deep.
I don't know that meaning is even necessary with that, because you've already used the other words. Deep satisfaction. I mean, it's profound. Plus, the whole point is you bring your whole self to it. When you've brought your whole self to it. I mean, I live on an island of 11,000 people. As we know that at least 5,000 of those 11,000 proclaim themselves as artists. The number of those 5,000 that make a living doing that is probably less than 100.
I was going to say 100, yeah.
I was going to say less than 20. Does that discount that? No. They bring meaning to, and so when we do art, when we do all kinds of stuff, you bring meaning to it that way. That's profound.
Yeah, I feel like every week we quote the Van Gogh thing, and there's just so many artists like Van Gogh who didn't sell anything.
Until he died.
Yeah, and now it's just, you look at his painting and you're thinking, how could anybody not buy this? I mean, these are just amazing paintings.
Right, of course.
But what he has contributed to the art world and to the interior world of so many people, I don't want to just limit it to the art world, because the meaning, the value that he gives me is, it goes beyond art, and it is very personal and very meaningful.
I mean, the point is, he brought himself to the canvas.
Man. This is we're really simplifying this. I'm loving this. It's relational and it's showing up, bringing yourself to the canvas, and just.
He didn't hold anything back. He wasn't there to obviously be famous, because there was not even a hope for that. I mean, he was there because there was something he wanted to let out.
I read something. I don't remember the name of the artist, but he's a quite famous artist now, and he said he produced his best work when he was working, in a city like New York, where they have those apartments that are under the sidewalk, they're down low, and that's where he just painted. And he said he knew no one was going to buy any of his paintings, and he was just painting because he was painting what was in his soul to paint. He will to this day say those are the best paintings he ever did. As soon as he started doing commission work, he's painting for somebody else, and he's not doing what's totally in his soul. His soul, he's bringing some of himself to it, obviously, but he's not bringing himself to it as if, I don't care if it sells or it doesn't sell.
Sure, of course. Yeah, I agree.
Let's wrap this up with a couple of questions. I've already asked, but I ask everybody a ton of times, because I really want to help our people. What suggestions do you have for our listeners that are searching for personal meaning or searching for some kind of meaning in life, that think it's hidden and it's not hidden? What kind of suggestions do you have for those people?
One, just slow down. Just stop. Literally. Because we already bring everything to the moment. It's already there. Everything has already been given to us. We need to just live into it. We can't live into it if we can't see it.
Yeah, I like the living into it. Yes.
And so the point is, I mean, people are going to come to me, and we know this because we know a lot of people who are in the coaching business, and I am in the coaching business. And so people want me to direct them towards something that they need to go do and go try. And I want them just to slow down and see all of the things that are already available to them.
Boy, I don't know if it has any relationship or not, but I just finished a memoir writing class. And the teacher, all she ever did on every submission of everybody in the room, and I think there were 10 of us, was saying, slow down. Slow down. You're rushing to the end. You're getting to the end. Slow down.
Yeah,
as a matter of fact, this paragraph.
Yeah, exactly.
She said this one paragraph is a whole essay.
Yeah. And everything was already there.
That is something to do, to slow down and think about things more often and to ponder. To slow down and ponder rather than being so busy.
And the other thing, which is really hokey, is, you know, if you want to find meaning, unpack, just go from today. Just take today or yesterday and talk about the moments of gratitude you had where you showed up for life.
I have a difficult time personally, and so if I do, then there must be a couple of other people. I know a lot of people don't, but I have a difficult time with gratitude. Well, what else could you help me with?
What do you mean you have a difficult time with gratitude?
I just have a difficult time of thinking, okay, what was I grateful for? What would be another way for me to look at that?
Tell me, think of the last 24 hours of your life. Where did you show up and you felt most connected?
In the last 24 hours, where, you know, I'm an old man. Well, you know, I did show up here.
So yeah, that's my point. My point is you didn't have to go very far back, Charlie. You not only showed up, you bring your curiosity to the table. You bring your sense of questioning to the table. You bring just the same thing you and I do whenever we have conversations. The irony of it is when we look for things we're supposed to be grateful for, we go skip over things that have been amazing.
Yeah, I can think of the times at your house, and I've been there, and there's the times of conversation that are really wonderful, and there's the times of just sitting in your garden there in your patio and just being quiet and not even reading, maybe just drawing, maybe just sitting thinking. You know, I still remember that, so that obviously was meaningful to me, if it's still very vivid in my mind.
Yeah, because I ask people, where did your soul, where did your spirit, if they don't like the word soul, fine, where did your spirit feel nourished?
Oh, we've got a third one. So we're going from relationship to show up to where do you feel fulfilled?
Yeah.
So if you can answer those three questions.
And fulfilled is like being hydrated, you know, when you have a good drink of water. That made a difference. You know, how the homeless people stand by the freeways, they do here. And people can give them a buck or 10 or 5 or whatever. And I saw somebody give one, and I realized as I watched it unfold, it was at a red light. And I realized, it was like, wow, there was an exchange there. Small, could be easy, could be random. And yet it was like, okay, I needed to do this. I could do more, and I may do more, but it might be a trigger. You never know what the little things are.
Yeah.
Seriously, you never know.
You know, and I like your idea of fulfilling is another word that's as big as meaning. It becomes a 25-cent word until we reduce it to doing something that is important at the time and that I value what I'm doing at that time. That's all it is.
Let me give you a quick story. So at Fuller Seminar, you know that I went to in Pasadena.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I'm in the 70s, so that was a long time ago. So we did pastoral care, which, of course, you have to do as a minister. And so, you take tests on how good you are at pastoral care. And, you know, you study and you read books. This is impressive. Because we all want to have meaning as pastors, right?
Right.
You know what the final exam was?
No telling.
Tell me the name of any of the janitors in Fuller Seminary.
No kidding.
Tell me the name of any of their family members.
And everybody failed.
Yeah. That's the whole thing about meaning. We focused on the wrong thing.
What a great class.
Is that not brilliant?
Yeah, that is brilliant. don't say this pridefully, but I do try to take note of servers and
table
people who are cleaning up the tables. You know what the bus girls or bus boys or whatever you call them.
That's what I'm pointing. You bring yourself to the moment. That's the whole deal is.
Paul's telling me here we're running out of time, but I'm making lists, and there's a fourth one.
I'm going to talk about meaning, Charlie. You never want to have too many, because then there's no meaning anymore. There's simply memory of keeping track of the list, and then your meaning is shot.
I get it. I really get that. That's great. That's great, Terry. I think we have, in my mind, I think we've solved the meaning of life. I really do think, you know, Terry, I honestly do think it's something that we've overcomplicated. It's been something that's, you know, somehow become popular in the book circles and everybody wondering about it. And it's really not that difficult. Summarizing the whole thing is show up. Show up, be nice, do good.
Did you see my last Sabbath moment last week?
No, I'm sorry, I didn't read that one.
This is real quick. The young kid, he comes, it's a Zen thing. A young monk comes to the Zen master, says, "I've entered the monastery to learn about God. Please teach me." And the Zen master says, "Well, have you eaten your porridge yet?" The monk says, "Yes, I have." And the Zen master says, "Well, then you better wash your bowl."
Help me. That was just the one hand clapping there. I don't get it.
But we want to make it so. He's saying, well, okay, fine. Well, then do what you need to do. Show up to the next thing.
That's great. Yeah. Just show up. Terry, you nailed it as usual. Thank you. Thank you so much for taking your time. I know this is your dinner cooking time. And I appreciate you taking time away from doing that. And we will be talking soon. So I'd like to welcome everybody. Well, I keep saying I want to welcome. I want to thank everybody for showing up. And this is The Next Chapter with Charlie. We will talk to you next week.
You've been listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie, talking about turning the page on his life and yours right here in Orange County's only community radio station, OCTalkRadio.net.